Down to Brass Stacks. Good morning.
Good morning, Miss Gill.
Down to Brass Stacks. Good morning.
Good morning, Miss Gill.
Hi, morning. Remember, we're going until 1 p.m. today, but we're taking a break at 11 a.m.
Okay, telling me to be short then.
No, I wanted to give that notice because there's some persons who are not aware who would not have tuned in at 10 when we said we're going to take a break for the central bank governor.
At what time again?
At 11 a.m.
Okay. Oh, that is coming up shortly.
Yes.
Okay. Since it was the last topic, this just goes to show that the Anglican Church is actually secular, right?
What goes to show the
Anglican Church is secular? It's full of secular priests.
The canon rules and regulations?
Right. It kind of more in the secular realm than the spiritual realm, because spiritual men should know the shepherd. They shouldn't go out be voting like if there's a political game.
So why do you pay taxes when you're in? I mean, I thought when you're in Caesar, you do as, you know, pay Caesar what is due unto him. Yeah, if you got laws, you got to follow the laws.
All right.
That'll make you any less spiritual than the other.
You see, that is the Jesus speaking to. You see, that is you're speaking to the spiritual people, telling spiritual people if you inside a secular world, you got to actually. In order to you to be truly following the law, you obey man's law, you obey God, right? Because God is allowing it. That's what that really means. God
so
using
clear.
Man, right? Since that the people don't want God to choose a king, you got to obey the king, the laws that the king put down there, mm-hmm. right? Until God come give you back the power. Because really and truly, the men of God is who's supposed to be ruling, not secular people. But I mean, you won't see that happening in the Pentecostal church, really, because the Pentecostal church will say to you that they had a calling, right? And then the priest now in the Anglican thing, them is going to college to learn about the Bible. Some of them don't really got a calling. They just go and do it like after they're going for a job, right? And then they resign and all sort of thing too after. And God's word shouldn't be like that. So I say this trouble is, I can easily select who should be there. The John Rogers, easy. That's easy.
That would be your preference. But
right.
This, I like the process say. Because the process is one that is democratic.
Uh-huh.
And well, at the end of the day, if a decision has not been realized or an outcome has not been realized using the canon rules, using the regulations as have been set down by the Anglican Church, it then goes to the bishops, the House of Bishops. And I think that that's fair process. Some people see it as if you don't get it organized inside or internally in Barbados, but the church is not just limited to the landscape of Barbados.
But what if we tell you now that God told me so?
You could tell me anything.
I know you can say so.
No, but people are free to say that.
Yeah. And really confusion is, I could see a lack of spiritual discernment.
You just
right?
said God told
Even,
you, now you say you can see. Which one
you.
Is it? You just said God told you, then you said I can see.
Right.
So God told you that the Anglican Church is secular?
That's my perspective.
Okay.
I got spiritual discernment. I could see that it's secular. Even the agriculture man just talk about, he spot John Rogers too, right? So he seems to got some discernment, more discernment than them. Because they're actually now one go the political route to select who they're
like.
That's
political.
It's political.
Okay.
It's political. Democracy is you call it political. And there's a next one too that is political, because we talk about, we celebrate Emancipation Day yesterday,
mm-hmm.
right? So if we come here now and say that, you shouldn't be taking the British Queen monarch here in Barbados, literally. And you do, then you should be celebrating that day that passed yesterday, because you are a slave, right?
Okay.
Nothing wrong is a law. Nothing wrong with having obeying laws and so on. But when you literally believe in something that is like an illusion, because that's what real politics is all about, you know, right? People that will come here and talk about politics don't know that believing in these political things like this government, this system of government that we have, and literally believe in it, is what politics really all about. That's why even the British people is getting, actually, the wise ones up there is getting called it theater. But when we accept it, we as black people accept it literally, we show that we really ain't know what we're doing. We talk about emancipation. Emancipate yourself from mental slavery, people. All right, my last point, since your time is short, I forgot to mention morality. Talk about the homosexual and their, because I heard a gentleman came and he talked about show your humanity when it comes to accepting homosexuality. But this is where love and wisdom need to actually, wisdom still has love, right? But you need to be the wise man. You need to be a man. Because a man have to do what is necessary. You might see a man doing certain things, and you might say that is not love. But if you look at how God rule and he judge and he chastise and he destroy and so on, you can't say that because you is got love that you must let things happen, right? If there ain't people like me to oppose homosexuality, it can be the end of humanity. Because homosexuality is not sustainable. Put them on an island and you can see what happened. They only came in through heterosexuals, so they should be listening to who bring them here. You can't let homosexuals do as they like, and that's what they want to do, right? Nobody ain't saying kill them nor get rid of them, but they got to understand that they cannot do as they like because their lifestyle is not really sustainable and be protecting you. Because if you say, all right, we love the pedophiles, right? We find it outrageous that they interfere with young children, but they cannot help but to do what they're doing because they have that psychological problem. And I read I saw a documentary that did a research on a twin that one was straight, the next one was gay. And in the womb, the problem with homosexuality is that the one that turned out gay is that his brain ain't really had the testosterone. It's testosterone that is really split me up because we start out as feminine, right? And then we should become man and know our manness when we start to grow. I will leave it with that one, Ms. Gill.
Thank you. You said a lot. This is Dr. Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Good morning, Lisa Gill.
Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Last week I had to go out and I didn't get to hear the start of your program, so I detained my sleep in order to hear it at midnight. And what I pick up in the stages is that there was this caller, who was your first caller this morning, who was talking about the version of the King James.
Yes.
But you went on further to say that he didn't read it. And you asked him why he didn't read it.
Mm-hmm. And so he doesn't understand it. Yes, I recall.
You know, so I went to the scriptures, which I know well. And in 1 Corinthians 2, it said that, in 14, it said that the natural man does not receive the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him. Nor can he understand them. I think that's what it says. Nor can he know them because they are spiritually discerned. So really, nobody who is natural want to read the Bible, and if they do read it, to say, well, I can read a little the Bible, they cannot understand it because they are natural. They need to become the new man by repenting and giving Christ their life, and then the Spirit comes in and teaches you and make you understand what the Bible is really saying. Now, so much for that. You don't want to make a comment on that.
Not really.
Right. So the next thing I want to look at is that I see that there was a conference by some churches talking about the LGBT. And an area in the discussion, they said that homosexuality or LGBT is not genetic. It really is genetic. But they don't understand. So they think it is a practice. It's not a practice. It is ingrained in the person and persons who are LGBT, and they don't understand that. So when they talk about they're going to destroy this agenda, what's the agenda? The agenda is simply that the people want to have equal rights. They want to live among all of us with their orientation and get all the benefits that you can get as a human being. You understand? So, I mean, they need to really come again. because they don't really understand this business of LGBT. You see, because why they don't understand it is because they don't understand God. If they had understand God, they would understand.
So how you can conclude that they don't understand God?
But listen, God understands.
No, I ask you, how could you come to that conclusion?
I come to that conclusion because they say they want to destroy the rights of the person.
I ask you one straight question. How could you come to the conclusion that the persons who held the conference do not know God?
All right, let me put it this way. A person like me that know God, put it that way, I do not discriminate against the LGBT. I do not. I embrace them. Mm-hmm. So if they're supposed to be people who know God, and they are discriminating, and yet still, man is body, soul, and spirit, and they're saying, we don't have anything against them, but we have something against their agenda. I can't get it. Understand? You either like a person or you don't like them. You don't have no authority given to you by God to say that you love the sinner and hate sin. That is God's prerogative, and not man's.
But you can't. Even although you're saying that, you still can't judge another person for having a different perspective than you.
I'm not judging them.
Yes, you are. You just said they don't know God. They can't know God because such and such.
But okay.
What we can say is that we may not agree with the approach held by a set of people, or we don't subscribe to how some people think, or we don't agree with that line of thinking. But then when we go into the realm of suggesting who they are or who they are not or who they don't know, is then when we get to the point where we've crossed the line in terms of judging. And the same way how... we don't want them to judge the LGBT community. We can't judge them for having a perspective contrary to what you think about the LGBT community.
I would say I'm not judging them, but I would say I don't agree with them.
That is fair.
I don't agree with them. I agree with them. Although I'm a man of God, I agree with them because...
You just said you don't agree with them. You said you don't agree with them. Now you say you agree with them.
No, I said I agree with the LGBT.
Or you agree with the LGBT?
I don't agree with the church people.
Right.
I don't agree with them at all.
And that's a fair perspective. But then you must understand that their premise, because you said that they said that lesbianism and homosexuality is not genetic.
Yeah, and I said it is.
And you say it is, but they are coming from the premise of the book that they read.
And I come into
which says in the beginning when it said that God made male and female. And it is on that premise that most persons in the church community believe that male and female speaks specifically to the genetics. Yes, you may have a tendency or a feeling which may, you know, lead to a homosexual practice, but that doesn't make you the sex for which you subscribe to, etc. But I want to thank you for your call, though.
But I'm going against that, too.
I want to thank you for your call, though. We're going to go to one more call before we take our break.
Good day. Today I'm updating you on Barbados's recent economic performance and sharing with you the bank's outlook for the rest of the year in light of recent developments. This review is presented in the context of three major policy initiatives taken by the government of Barbados in the second quarter of 2018. First, following the May general election, the new administration approached the International Monetary Fund for endorsement of its homegrown economic recovery and transformation plan and for balance payment support to restore the buffer of international reserves to acceptable levels. Discussions between the government of Barbados and the IMF have already commenced on the elements of the program that would support the disbursement of funds. Secondly, government announced the suspension of payments on external commercial debt obligations and indicated its intention to pursue a comprehensive restructuring of its domestic and external debt. This initiative is expected to complement the broader efforts of fiscal consolidation and facilitate a return to fiscal and debt sustainability. Preliminary discussions with external and domestic creditors have commenced and will intensify over the coming months. Finally, as a first phase of economic reforms, the government introduced a suite of budgetary measures that are intended to alter the incidence of taxation and provide earmark funding for some state-owned enterprises. These entities will ultimately need to exhibit greater efficiency as they transition to functioning independently of government. In addition, the increase in domestic taxation was partly targeted at strengthening the social safety net and enabling urgently needed infrastructural spending. Given implementation lags, the full impact on fiscal performance will be felt during fiscal year 2019-2020. These initiatives, combined with further structural reforms, have the potential to restore stability, engender investor confidence, create the framework for durable growth over the medium term, and enhance resilience to economic and environmental shocks. Turning to the economic performance. Economic activity in Barbados is provisionally estimated to have contracted by 0.6% during the first 6 months of 2018. Tourist arrivals for the first half of the year increased by an estimated 3.4%, but the expansion was not sufficient to offset a weakening of length of stay on economic activity. Visitors from the North American region continued their fourth year of strong growth, with long-stay arrivals from the United States and Canada increasing by 8.9% and 3% respectively, while the number of United Kingdom tourists grew by 3.6%. Cruise visitors declined following a reduction in ship calls for the 6 months ending June 2018. In addition to tourism, traded sector activity benefited from increased sugarcane production, which enabled a modest rise in sugar output. Construction activity weakened and output fell by 4% for the first 6 months. In addition, the fiscal consolidation measures of recent years continued to dampen activity in the other non-traded sectors. The average unemployment rate for the four quarters ending March 2018 was 10%, compared with 9.7% 1 year earlier. Domestic inflation, as measured by the 12-month moving average retail price index, increased to 4.9% at the end of April, compared to a rate of 4.5% at the end of 2017. The increase in the retail price level primarily reflects the impact of the increase in the National Social Responsibility Levy, coupled with the pass-through effects of higher energy prices. The international reserves rose by over $33 million to reach $443 million during the first 6 months of the year. This was the first increase for the comparable period since 2008. The central bank received an increase in net purchases of foreign exchange from commercial banks, but the overall outturn partly reflected lower outflows on debt service, approximately $99 million in June, following government's decision to suspend external debt payments. The pool of reserves at 7.2 weeks of import cover remained below the 12-week adequacy benchmark. The deficit on the external current account of the balance of payments narrowed on account of higher receipts from travel credits and lower external interest payments. In addition, there was an estimated 3% decline in imports despite the continued rise in oil prices during the first half of the year. The financial system remained liquid, with holdings of excess cash of about 15% above the statutory requirement. Credit to the private sector by banks remained weak, but there was a moderate recovery in deposits, which had declined during the corresponding period a year earlier. With the deposit rates stabilizing at low levels, there was a continued shift in deposits away from time towards liquid demand deposits. The performance for the first quarter of 2018-19 fiscal year resulted in a small deficit of approximately $10 million. This reflected the improved primary surplus balance resulting from the fiscal consolidation efforts of the two preceding years and the suspension of external interest payments. Revenues are estimated to have risen by $69 million, with the NSRL, the foreign exchange fee, and excises being the main sources of revenue growth, contributing $29 million, $19 million, and $10 million respectively. However, the value-added tax collections were flat after rising sharply the previous year. Current expenditures contracted by $46 million due to the reduced interest payments. Transfers to public institutions were unchanged, while capital expenditures remained consistently below budgeted allocations. The decision to suspend debt service payments reduced the borrowing requirements during the quarter. Financing from foreign project flows was still insufficient to offset foreign amortization payments on multilateral borrowing, even though outflows were smaller than originally envisaged. Commercial banks provided $50 million in financing to government before the suspension of external payments. The central bank, which had scaled back its lending during the preceding year, provided $105 million in financing during the quarter. This increase was twofold. First, government reduced its deposits at the bank in part to cover deferred payments, including tax refunds. Secondly, the reduced funding provided by some non-banks created short-term financing pressures. The bank views this accommodation as necessary during this transitional phase and supports the amendment to limit future central bank financing of fiscal deficits. At the end of June, government's liability to creditors stood at 155% of GDP. This large stock of indebtedness has contributed to the deterioration in the sovereign credit rating and the ultimate decision of government to pursue a comprehensive debt restructuring. This decision reflects government's effort to lower its interest burden, reduce gross financing requirements, create fiscal space, and ultimately reduce and stabilize the debt ratio. And now to the outlook. Barbados, in collaboration with its multilateral financing partners, is about to embark on a major program of fiscal consolidation and structural reforms that is intended to facilitate durable and enhanced growth over the medium term. Work is proceeding towards a speedy conclusion of the policy framework needed to achieve agreement with the Fund, to unlock resources from the international financial institutions, and to reaffirm Barbados' commitment and willingness to address its economic challenges. Successful program implementation is critical to building a stronger economy. In this regard, the catalytic impact of the program should permit a gradual restoration of the international reserves buffer in excess of the 12-week benchmark. This is essential for restoring confidence and creating an environment that encourages domestic and foreign investment. The program provides an opportunity for a sustained improvement in the public finances. Government has already committed to realizing a primary surplus of 6% of GDP from fiscal year 2019 to 2020, as the measures announced in the May 2018 budget take effect on a full-year basis. In addition, these measures are expected to be supported by expenditure reforms that seek to reduce the transfers to state-owned enterprises, strengthen the fiscal consolidation process over the next 18 to 24 months, and reduce domestic financing pressures. The broader fiscal adjustment will be complemented by the debt restructuring, which is intended to create fiscal space by lowering interest costs, enabling government to generate surpluses that help in eliminating the stock of arrears on a phased basis. An improved macroeconomic framework has the potential to strengthen growth prospects. The tourism sector remains pivotal to economic activity, but Barbados requires new investment in tourism and ancillary sectors to accelerate growth within a low inflationary environment. The economy remains vulnerable to external oil price shocks, and no significant improvement in growth for 2018 is anticipated. The current forecast is for a decline in economic activity of 0.5%. However, implementation of some of the private and public sector projects in the pipeline is expected to raise confidence and contribute to an improved outlook for growth. In addition, accelerated growth requires continuous improvements in business facilitation, enabling speedier decision-making and creating new opportunities for an injection of foreign investment flows to support the balance of payments. Finally, enhancing the outlook for the Barbadian economy requires a stronger policy framework together with the commitment of all stakeholders. The bank considers the continued role of the social partnership as vital to the recovery effort as all sectors work together to raise national productivity levels and enhance national competitiveness. I thank you.
Actually, we have to take a break shortly because we're going to listen to the central bank governor, and then we'll be with you. We'll be back with you. So thank you so much for your contribution. This is Down to Brass Tacks.
And of course, we welcome our online viewers and our panel of journalists in our studio here at the Central Bank of Barbados. And good morning as well to those of you following us on radio. We now invite our questions from the media, and we begin with Emmanuel Joseph from Barbados Today. Emmanuel.
Thank you very much, Noveline. Now, Governor, we all know that Barbados is in an economic mess. That is given. Now that we are entering into an agreement with the IMF under what I see here, the extended fund facility, which is for a longer period, and which is when a country is in a really, really bad situation. Spell out to us, okay, what Barbadians should prepare for in terms of the price we have to pay for entering into this agreement with the IMF.
Thank you, Emmanuel. I think the the broader issues that we need to understand, and just if we can put in context what we're about to attempt. First of all, as you're aware, the three fundamental issues have emerged in recent times. One is the loss of reserves. So our reserves have been depleted. Secondly, our fiscal deficits have been larger than we would consider to be prudent. And therefore, that process has already started over in recent years, but obviously needs to be strengthened. And thirdly, the total stock of debt has become unsustainable, bearing in mind the interest costs which it absorbs at present. And therefore, that is one of the issues which we have to address. So in designing a program, the focus of the program will be on trying to strengthen the public finances. As you're aware, and as was mentioned in the press release, the new administration took additional measures in early June to seek to address some of the fiscal challenge, raising revenues. There were also some increases in expenditure, but on balance, there should be a net positive for the public finances of at least over 1% of GDP. Now, this fiscal effort has to be strengthened. I think the government has already announced that it plans to look at how it can address the whole issue of transfers in particular, but expenditure quite generally they want to focus on as a means of strengthening the underlying public finances. Part of that effort of strengthening the public finances will involve addressing the debt issue. As I pointed out to you, the debt accounts for 7.5 to 8% of GDP. And therefore, what the debt restructuring is intended to do is to reduce the amount of expenditure that is focused on debt expenses in any given year. So it's a combined impact of strengthening the public finances through expenditure restraint, but also through reducing the cost of servicing the debt.
This involves sending home people, closing down some of the statutory corporations?
It is too early to say what the nature of the reforms as it relates to the enterprises will be. I think the government, by my understanding, is not focused on wholesale sending home of persons. So I think that is part of what the government has already said. But one has to look at how do you improve the efficiency of the delivery of the services which we currently deliver? Is it that we have to look at the fee structure of some of these enterprises? There are a whole range of things which we have to look at before one can come to the conclusion that it leads to the sending home of persons. What is critical is that we have to improve the delivery of services within the broader public service. And that may or may not involve any job losses, but certainly there is no intention, as I understand it, to have wholesale job losses.
The answer?
Good morning, Governor. Deanza Roberts, Starcom Network. Apart from the measure of the IMF assisting in terms of the whole issue that we're dealing with, what projects do you see that the government can undertake ASAP or in the near future for the long-term economic benefit of the country?
Okay. So the economy has to be driven a lot, I think, by private sector investment. We're going through a period now where we engage in fiscal consolidation. That is not going to give the government a lot of room to introduce new large-scale projects. I'm quite sure that there will be some work. As you know, for example, we do have to continue the efforts to address the issues presented, for example, by the sewage problems on the South Coast. But I don't envisage that the government will, in the short term, engage in substantial new capital expenditure. And therefore, what is important is for us to be able to get our private sector projects going. There are a number of projects which we have you know, we've spoken about in the past and which we are aware of. And some of them have been stalled. And I believe that what the administration is working on is to try to get these projects moving. Because if we can get the private sector projects moving, that will facilitate increased activity in the construction sector. But then there are spillovers into the other sectors in the economy, whether it's the retail sector, the other services sector, and that is how you generate growth going forward. But I don't think that we should look to seeing a lot of this growth going forward being generated through public sector activity in the short term.